loyalties and sympathies. It was a bright autumn day when Vic rode back into Valbec. The place looked nothing like the last time she was there, in the final chaotic days of the uprising. No rubbish choking the streets, no burned-out shells of buildings, no sounds of distant violence, no unattended corpses. Only a few pink smears showing through the hastily applied whitewash, reminding the careful observer that these buildings were once daubed with burners' slogans. There was even a pleasant breeze, carrying the smog of the rebuilt manufactories away inland and leaving the air halfway clean. All quiet and orderly. Almost too quiet, the few people in the streets scurrying off to stare from alleys and doorways. But then cheering crowds might be too much to ask for when the arch-lector of the Inquisition arrives in your city with 30 armed practicals. Pike's last visit, after all, had left the road out of town decorated with hanged men.
"No sign of revolution," murmured Vic.
"No," said Pike. "You sound almost disappointed." She looked sharply sideways. His Eminence stared straight back at her, eyes bright in his burned mask of a face. No way to tell what he was thinking. There never was. But she saw the danger hidden in the observation, like a cake full of nails.
"No one's fought harder to stop the breakers than I have," she said. "I am well aware. You scotched their schemes in Adua with impressive ruthlessness, and we could not have dealt so smoothly with the uprising here without your efforts. Nobody doubts your loyalty."
"Good," said Vic. She had become acutely aware how many practicals were surrounding her. "To Arch-Lector Glockter," and she felt the hairs stand on the back of her neck. "He was the one who helped you escape the camps, after all, who gave you a new life, who moulded you into such a formidable spy. But Glockter is gone." Pike gave the sigh of a mourner at a funeral, if not the tears. "And your loyalty to me is quite another question. I, after all, have done nothing to earn it. To count upon it so lightly would be awfully presumptuous."
"The breakers are traitors," said Vic.
Stick to the official line. He could only judge her on what she said, not what she thought.
"Enemies of the king. There's nothing to sympathize with."
"Nothing?" They rode beneath the towering crane at the edge of a deserted building site, Pike's eyes hidden in the sudden darkness of its shadow. "Do you really think so? Can you really think so? A good soldier fights in a world of black and white. He must make monsters of his enemies. The devious southerner, the degenerate Styrian, the barbaric Northman, the treacherous breaker. But a good spy must swim in an ocean of grey, swept by unpredictable currents far out of sight of land. Those of us who walk, talk, sleep with the enemy, well, we see that they are people. We hear their motives, their hopes, their justifications. Despite your efforts to prove the contrary, you are not made of stone, Inquisitor. None of us are. Proud men like Sybalt, noble men like Melma. How could you not sympathize, given where you come from?"
"Adua?"
Vic kept her face neutral, but behind the mask her mind was racing. Was he trying to trap her? Say she had no sympathy with the breakers and he'd call her a liar. Say she had sympathy, he'd call her a traitor. "I meant the prison camps of Angland. I have come to believe that the heart of a society is revealed in its prisons." Pike rocked gently with the movement of his horse, eyes fixed up the empty street ahead. "I was not there nearly as long as you, but long enough to lose my face. Honestly, I was never a handsome man. I dare say I turn more heads now. Your scars may not show quite so clearly, but I never doubt you have them. So I believe I understand you."
"Really?"
In spite of all her efforts, her voice sounded strangled. "Oh, yes. I believe I understand you better than you understand yourself." It worried her that Pike was suddenly so talkative.
It made her think that he was working his way to something, and she would not like it at all when they got there. She had the feeling, yet again, that this was one of those moments when her life hung by a thread. But when she faced Sybalt, Rissinau, Vitari, Savine Dan Brock, she had gone in with her eyes open, had known the line she must walk. What Pike wanted was a mystery. "It was Colonel West who pulled me from the camps," he mused, "without the slightest idea that we had known each other years before. In his company I even held a shield in a duel, if you can believe that, when the Bloody Nine beat the Feared and made himself King of the Northmen. Life is such a cobweb of coincidences, isn't it? West was a man one could admire." He gave a sorry sigh. "But the truly good men never seem to last. He died, and I began to work with Archlector Glockter. Even though I knew he was far from a good man, even though he was the very man who had sent me to the camps in the first place. Does any of this sound familiar?" It did. Not the part about holding a shield in a duel, but otherwise quite uncomfortably so. Pike watched a nervous-looking set of labourers clear out of their way to huddle against the houses as they cluttered past. "In the name of justice, I tortured dissenters in Adua. In the name of freedom, I imprisoned rebels in Starrickland. In the name of order, I spread chaos across the Far Country. I was as loyal a servant as the Crown ever had." Vic couldn't help but frown at that choice of words. "Was." Then the manufactories started to spring up, and the unrest began among the spinners, and I was sent here to Valbec, as superior of the Inquisition.
"You were superior of Valbec?"
Pike had that little curl at the corner of his mouth, which was the closest he came to a smile. "You didn't know?" The street opened out, and they rode into the square that should have been Valbec's busy heart. It was deserted now, except for well-armed guards posted at the corners and clustered on the steps of the courthouse, where Judge had tossed out death sentences. Men with fine new breastplates, fine new halberds, fine new swords, everything twinkling in the autumn sun. A double row of them was drawn up in front of the rebuilt Valbec branch of Valent and Bulk, a temple to debt more magnificent than ever, scaffolding clinging to its pillared façade so sculptors could finish a frieze of history's richest merchants upon its giant pediment.
"Who are these?" muttered Vic.
"Some private militia, hired to keep the peace with the king's soldiers gone." But something didn't fit. Rough-looking men, all standing their own way. Clean armour, maybe, but unshaven faces. Pike didn't look concerned. You might almost have called him jaunty as he led them across the empty square at a trot, past the vacant pedestals of statues torn down during the uprising, to the bank's front steps. That double row of armed men parted, and two figures came from the midst. Two awfully familiar figures. One was a fat man in a well-cut suit, the other a tall, lean woman in a dress stitched from many coloured rags, a rust-eaten breastplate over the top, her red hair pinned into a bonfire tangle.
"Fuck," breathed Vic.
Not often she was at a loss for words, but right then she had nothing better.
"Victorine den Teufel," called Rissinau, the light of pious belief burning as brightly in his eyes as ever.
"Unless I'm much mistook," sneered Judge, the light of angry madness burning even brighter in hers, "which I'm not often."
First thing Vic thought was that they'd fallen into a trap. Then Pike spread his arms wide.
"My friends," he called, as he swung down from his saddle to meet them. "My children!"
And he kissed Rissinau on the forehead and did the same to Judge, all smiling as if this was a family reunion long put off, while the armed men thumped the butts of their halberds against the steps and sent up an approving rattle. Like every puzzle, Once Vic knew the answer, she couldn't understand how she hadn't seen it right away. She was the one who'd fallen into the trap. She alone.
"You're the Weaver," she said.
"A name I have used at times." Pike gestured to the soot-stained old buildings around the square, the new chimneys looming beyond their roofs. "So much has changed since I was the superior here. The rich have grown ever richer, but the poor, well, you have seen it. You have lived it. If the heart of a nation is revealed in its prisons, then you and I have seen the heart of the Union, and we know that it is rotten. I knew when I was in the camps that rot had to be burned away. But it was not until I came to Valbec that I began to dream." And he closed his eyes and took a long breath through his nose. "That I would be the one to do it." Judge snatched a lit torch from one of the guards, its flames dancing in the corners of her black eyes.
"Can we begin?"
"I do not say we can." Pike leaned towards her. "I say we must."
"Ha!"
Judge gave a delighted giggle as she danced up the steps towards the bank's open doors.
"You must have had a long ride, Sister Victorine." Rissinau placed his soft hand on her knee. "Perhaps you should dismount."
Vic glanced carefully around, more habit than anything else, but she wouldn't get out of this by some mad dash on horseback. She swung her leg over the saddle and stepped down to the square.
"I called the like-minded people I gathered the Breakers," said Pike, watching Judge set her torch to oil-soaked wood at the bank's doors. "Not because we would break machines, though we have, but because we would break the Union. Break it and rebuild it in a new way, a better way."
Pike watched the flames lick at Valent and Bulk's fine new stonework, and the armed Breakers gathered in the square gave a great cheer. "The banks have twisted about the nation like ivy about a tree, choking all life from it, corrupting everything. So it is fitting that the destruction begins with this monument to exploitation. But it will not stop there." He turned towards Vic. "The uprising the closed council so feared has already happened."
3 days ago," said Rissinau, rubbing his hands delightedly, "while King Orso was winning his great victory against the rebels, they wanted us to distract the king's men for them. Instead, they distracted the king's men for us."
"And not just here in Valbec," said Pike. "By now, Keln and Holsthorm and many of the smaller cities of the Union will be in the hands of the Breakers, too."
"In the hands of their people," frothed Rissinau, wagging a fat finger. "And Adua will be next. Our day is finally come."
And the men cheered louder than ever. Vic had smugly thought she knew how things really were. Simple as that, everything was turned upside down.
"What the hell do you want from me?" she asked.
"You served Glockter faithfully," said Pike. "Admirably, even. Because he was the one man who ever gave you anything. Even if it was only the chance to wear the boot rather than having it ground into your face." He did understand her, damn it. Maybe not better than she understood herself, but well enough.
"I would like to offer you something more."
The silence stretched out, broken by the laughter and whoops of the armed Breakers, the crackle of flames, the tinkle of shattering glass.
"Well, don't keep me in suspense," said Vic.
Seemed to her she'd get nothing with meekness she never had before.
"What are you offering?"
"Join us," said Pike. "Become a Breaker. Give the Union back to its people and shape the future. Commit yourself to a cause worthy of your loyalty."
"I gave up on causes when I left the camps."
"All the better." Pike glanced at Judge, who was tossing her torch through the bank's doors and backing down the steps, a thin black figure against the rising flames, with her fists thrust up in triumph. A movement needs passionate believers, but it needs calculating skeptics too.
Vic glanced across the smiles of the armored men on the steps, lit by the flickering fires above. No shortage of belief there.
And my other option?
Leave. Go back to King Orso. Serve his corrupt regime in its dying days, or run to distant Thond, for that matter, where they worship the sun. Go with our blessing. Vic thought of the long line of hanged men Pike had left outside the city a few months before. She'd thought him ruthless then. Now it turned out they'd been his own people. A man who'll waste no time hanging 200 of his friends, what might he do to his enemies? Smoke was already pouring from the windows of the bank, giving every breath the familiar char and fury stink of Valbec she so well remembered. Maybe he was telling the truth, and if she chose to stick with Orso, they'd let her swan out of the city and off on her merry way. But she wasn't about to bet her life on it. If she'd learned one thing in the camps, it's that you stand with the winners.
"I'm with you," she said simply. Why say any more?
Pike held out one burned hand towards her, while behind him the Valbec branch of Valent and Bulk went up in towering flames for a second time.
"Then come, Sister Teufel. There is much to be done if we are to give the people what they need. Which is? Change."
Pike put that hand on her shoulder and guided her away across the square.
"A great change."
You have been listening to The Trouble with Peace by Joe Abercrombie, read by Stephen Pacey. It is an Orion Audiobooks production, copyright Orion Publishing. The executive producer was Paul Stark. Recording, production and music by Peter Rinney.